right to live righteously. It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's episode number 353, a long begged for episode of the Cultural Hall. My guest, Gaynalyn Condi. Don't worry, we'll ask her about that name and what that is all about. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Richie T. It feels like it literally has almost been a year of this in the making. Do you realize that?
It's been more than a year.
Has it?
Yeah, you first begged me to be on the Cultural Hall more than a year ago, for
Richie,
sure.
Richie, let's not start false rumors.
No! Rumors, sure, but false rumors, yeah, maybe not so much. We are not allowed to tell people where we are, but we can certainly tell people about how the setup is. Gaynalyn in another room, separate from me. It's like she's being quarantined, so we have this prison-like glass that we are looking through and able to do this interview for.
I did put deodorant on, but this is a good barrier in case I have leprosy or something.
Well, I don't know. I don't know you.
I know, it's true. Yes, you do.
Now, I know you decently through my day job, and actually we met up at KSL, the broadcast house in Salt Lake City, where like Deseret News and the church news and all that is. And you stopped me and you said, hey, please put me on your show. And I said, I'm not interested. And that's genuinely how our first interaction went. But, you know, with the weekly pleading and the constant barrage of
Richie!
Messages via Facebook Messenger.
Oh, my gosh.
Tell people, let's
start. Listen, are you going to talk about Light the World? I just saw those pictures come up when we were at the giving, at the giving vending machines.
But that's where we re-met. I met you the second time.
I know.
And we talked for like 2 hours that night.
We did. And I think after that, you had to repent for your prejudgment of me.
Yeah, maybe. Something like that. If I ever repented. It's hard with perfection to actually ever. No, I'm teasing. Gaynalyn, where does your name come from? It's a bizarre name.
Oh my gosh. You know, let me say this straight up. I do have a list of some key people as soon as I pass over that I want to run up and give a hug because I don't know as spirits of how the hugging's going to go there, but I'm a hugger.
Well, we have bodies, so it would go to things.
Once we're resurrected.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, but I'm saying.
So you're talking spirit hugs?
Yeah, maybe I'm going to be a resurrected being. I'm just saying if
no,
I pass.
No, you're going to be resurrected. God's promise. Come on.
Okay, but eventually. But okay. I'm saying when I first pass.
Maybe your punishment.
Are we going to talk doctrine?
Maybe your punishment will be that you're not allowed to hug for a while. Is that what
you're
saying?
No, I'm saying if I pass before the resurrection and I'm not a resurrected being, there are a few key people that I really want to meet.
Tell me.
Eliza Snow is at the top of the list.
But you're not named after Eliza Snow, and I felt
I
asked you about your name.
I'm going to get the answer. And so what I'm saying to you is, after those greetings, it's not the highest thing on the list, but I am going to do some investigation about the parable that is told of my name.
Okay.
Okay, because this story is told. And now I can't check the facts on this. This is what I'm saying to you. Eliza Snow, Joseph Smith, you know, obviously Jesus first, a few key people I want to meet.
Sure.
I want to find out, is this true? A pioneer family supposedly came through this town. My great-grandmother was in utero. Uh-huh. Her mother was pregnant with the 11th child.
Oh
so I don't know if names were becoming scarce.
What else we got?
Yeah. And then this pioneer family was driving through town, and the story is told that that this little girl got out of the wagon, ran across the road, and the mom yelled out, "Gaynell, get back in the wagon."
Uh-huh.
Thus, the great-great-grandmother said, "This next baby is named Gaynell." My great-grandmother was born, Gaynell. My mom's middle name, Gaynell. My mom decided, you know, Gaynell.
Yeah.
That's going to be cumbersome, and a bit of a thorn in your side in junior high.
Sure.
Why don't we add a hyphen to it?
Sure.
With a capital L-Y-N.
Right, because it's Utah too.
No, I grew up in California.
Oh.
And born there.
So California sets the standard of
weird
LDS
names.
No, I think
my mom just was like, and we'll just, and hyphens confuse everyone.
Sure.
They think that means it's an optional drop and it's actually bring together. Don't drop it.
Yeah, don't you dare.
Yeah. And so it has been a challenging name to grow up with. But I will say, when you need a URL for your website, when you need to start your YouTube channel, when you need to go on YouTube and Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, it's great. Yeah, no one has it.
There's no other Gainal
no.
Inns.
So people are like, how can I find you? I'm like, just try to Google it and you'll find it.
Sound
I mean, it's
it
that easy to find.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's one of those things as well that it's kind of the icebreaker. When I speak to Latter-day Saint communities, I often say me and the brother Jared were tight.
Yeah, you and Mahan Rai Mori
Ankhamer. Yeah, God was like, sorry, Mahan Rai Mori Ankhamer, too complicated. We're just calling you the brother of Jared. So my nail technicians are from Vietnam, and they cannot, I don't know why they can't pronounce it, because Vietnamese sounds much more complicated to me, but they call me G. They just shorten it to G. And I'm also known as Cameron's mom and Brooklyn's mom, like the brother of Jared.
Sure. Yeah. Do you have siblings?
I have a lot. That's another whole story.
So it's hard for you to pick about, like, if you would be the sister of whatever your
sister's
name is. Yeah, no,
there's way too many.
I don't want to get too much wrapped up in your name.
Okay, but we can.
But as you point out, people can find you online anywhere, GainalLynn.com. As I think about other options that your mom could have done, it could have been like Gainal Joe or, you know what I'm saying?
Yes,
the very
it could have.
Gainal Jean. Like, there could have been a lot worse. So I just want to give you.
And not to leave it too soon, but it's the Hebrew form of John, female version of John.
Really?
Yes. And so there are Jewish, Hebrew-speaking people out in the world that are named Gainal.
Right.
And
so it's not
they're
completely
men.
Bizarre.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm in the wrong culture, and so you could just call me John.
Right.
It could be Gainal John, which would be repetitive in Hebrew.
But I don't know. A good, strong name like John Condi is pretty great, honestly.
And not confusing at all when a female walks in.
Yeah, no,
not at all.
No, but like a pen name? If you ever have to write something a little off-brand?
I think that's a great idea.
John Condi.
That's back in the olden days when we had to do collect calls. Uh-huh. Do you remember?
Yeah.
And I'm at Rick's College.
Uh-huh.
And I
You remember?
Yeah, do you remember?
Yeah.
Because I say things now and people are like, what are you talking about? I'm like, how old are you? Oh, you weren't even born yet.
Yeah,
you don't know what I'm talking about. You do know what I'm talking about. We didn't have cell phones. We had to like monitor our budget for calling home.
Uh-huh.
So I would do collect calls from college.
Sure.
The operator never said my name correctly. So the joke was my family used to call me Dino. Because every operator would be like, collect call, will you accept a collect call from Dino? No matter how many times I said, no, it's Gainal. Dino, yeah. Gainal.
Dino.
Gainal. Yeah, fine, it's Dino. Just call me Dino.
Let me ask you this, since we've gone off on this tangent.
Yes.
Did you ever do the thing where, like, if you were at the mall and you needed mom or dad to pick you up and you do the collect call, but you didn't actually want them to pick you or to take the call?
No.
So you do the collect call, and it was in the sort of later years of collect calls where you could just record the message, where it'd be like, record the message. And so it'd be like, you have a collect call from, pick me up at the mall! And then,
Richie, why weren't we friends in the late
80s? Well, because you were raised in California. And because I wasn't born yet.
I knew it.
I'm kidding.
I'm older than you.
I'm kidding, of course. Two other things on the name since we've gone there.
Right.
I bet it was a disappointing thing as a kid when you go to like Disneyland and you try and get the Mickey ears that say Gainal Inn or like the license plate in the honeycomb.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, yeah, they'll put my name on it.
Never.
Nope. Ever.
And even the Lynns were always double N's and I'm in a one N.
Yeah, yeah.
My kids' names are Cameron and Brooklyn.
Of course they are.
And Brooklyn loves it because like anything from Brooklyn has a Brooklyn on it.
Sure.
And
she's got a bridge.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's got a whole bridge.
Yeah.
So.
And then the other thing is, you know, this year with the Tabernacle Choir at Temple Square.
Yes.
You know, the narrator for this year, you know who that is. His name is Richard Thomas.
I know.
Who I am named after.
Really? Is that literally
who? I am
who?
Richard Thomas Stedman, named after John Boy on the Waltons.
Oh, I love that story, Richie T.
Now, here's the best part of that. I had the opportunity to meet him.
You did where?
He was in a show on Broadway, a David Mamet play.
Yes.
With the insurance guy, the really deep insurance guy, where they forgot their lines. Eddie Izzard was in the show as well. I got to meet all of them.
Eddie Izzard too?
Yeah. They were all in the show and they couldn't remember their lines to save their life in this Broadway production. It was pretty great. I stuck around.
Did it validate you in your theater escapades?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
So I waited outside the door and I said, Richard Thomas, I am named after you. And he went, cool. So I got a picture with him. I'm going to try and arrange another meeting with him when
he comes
to town.
You need to upload it on this episode because then people will have reference.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
You know what else is unique about that day?
What?
That's the day that I got engaged to my first wife.
Wow. Which we've... another chapter in that
story. Yeah, that went well. Chapter two, so much better. It's a page turner this time.
Happy wedding, by the way.
Thank you very much. Gaynelyn, you are a motivational speaker and an author, but I want to know your backstory. You got a bunch of siblings, couple kids. You're born in California and
Sacramento,
raised there?
Sacramento, yeah.
Okay. So Northern California.
Right, and then grew up high school years in Yuba City, which until there was a temple announced there, no one knew where it was. It's south of Chico, north of Sac. That's where I went to Marysville High School, class of 89.
A lot of members of the church?
None.
There? None?
What are you talking about? I was the token previously known as Mormon. We don't call ourselves that anymore.
Sure.
And my high school class, shout out to the class of 89. They are so supportive. I grew up in a very diverse high school where I was the token member of the church.
Uh-huh.
I think there's a larger population of members of the church there now for sure.
I would think so with the temple.
Well, yeah. But that was a very interesting thing because we were all racially diverse. Mm-hmm. We were economically diverse. We were religiously diverse. And we were this very, socially diverse but united group. And I think they're the bar for which I see all society could reach.
Cool. So it was like this utopian, back everybody up, I got your back.
Yeah, like the athletes were friends with the stoners. Mm-hmm. The cheerleaders were friends with the baseball players.
Cool.
And the debate team hung out with the drama team. Like we all, and I just went to my 30th class reunion and it is still like that. It's like, we were a very small high school in many ways, but I think we have the capacity as a society to actually enjoy each other from differing perspectives instead of like trying to create this homogeneous experience all the time.
So it wasn't a night where you went around and told everyone that they were wrong and that they needed to believe the
no,
same way you did?
No, actually, they were super protective of me. And you know what? It's funny. When Mitt Romney was running for president on Facebook and social media, if there was any of this like backlash about his religious affiliation, uh-huh, my high school friends would totally like get on Twitter and get on Facebook and they would be like, be nice to the Mormon guy. We know one. And yeah. I was the one.
That's her.
I was the one.
It's the Marysville what? What's the mascot?
Indians.
It's curious to me just because I...
Indians, which is not politically correct, but, you know,
I think Indians could still be politically correct.
They
no,
like
not
to
at
be
all.
Called Native Americans.
Okay.
And I am part
or indigenous
Native
people, right?
Indigenous people, exactly.
And then
it's
we get into that whole tangent.
Yeah.
We don't need to go
yeah,
there.
Yeah, we don't need to go there.
So are they still the Indians
they
then?
Still are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mom comes from Pioneer stock. What about Dad? Dad a convert?
Dad is a convert. And he's Irish, and some of my Native American blood has come through there. So my maiden name is Killo.
Okay.
And it's now my middle name because I'm one of those members of the church that was the female growing up with no middle name so that when you got married, you could keep your maiden name. I don't know if that's a church culture thing, but...
A little bit.
Yeah.
I think maybe just, that time period. So I'm trying to put this together. You're Gaynelyn Killo Condi?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
It's massive.
You should be a wrestler.
Or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I married into the Condi family, which is here in Utah specifically, is very common. I get asked a lot of are you related to this church leader? And so that was kind of a breath of fresh air to not have a strange first name, an awkward last name, and now I have a last name that people recognize a little bit.
So to answer that question, are you related
yes,
to any of those Condis?
We are.
Who?
So President Monson was a Condi. His mom was a Condi, so he was a cousin.
Okay.
We had one Thanksgiving dinner with him.
Really?
And we brought mashed potatoes in a crock pot and folding tables in the little house in Bountiful. We now call those mashed potatoes prophet potatoes because the prophet ate them.
Yeah.
The year we had Thanksgiving with him was the year his biography came out, so that gives some context.
Okay.
Did you
read the biography or
yes,
just eat the mashed potatoes?
Especially the Condi chapter.
Okay.
There's a whole Condi chapter. He sent my son a sweet letter when he got his Eagle Scout and a little genealogy sheet, and he signed it Cousin Tommy, and
aww,
he was prophet at the time. Yeah, it was very
cool.
Sweet. But the more specifically closer relation is Spencer Condi, who wrote the first biography for Russell M. Nelson, and he and my father-in-law were first cousins but were raised on the same farm. So he's if you know Spencer and his Gordon B. Hinckley impersonations, and he's a funny guy, and he's stepped in. My father-in-law has passed, and he's very much a patriarchal piece of our family. So
now that we've kind of set the stage of who you are.
Seriously, I've given hundreds and hundreds of thousands of interviews. None of them like this. So shout out to you for pulling out the most maybe not interesting pieces of information, but unique.
I think that it is, but it is unique. People will listen to this and hear things that
they have not heard on any other interview I've given.
We're going to take a break. When we come back in the second block of the Cultural Hall, I want to talk about what the college at the Ricks College was like, how you met your husband and that whole thing. And we'll get into what you're an author about and a speaker of. We'll do that coming back in the second block of the Cultural Hall. I want to take a quick second and talk to you about Best DJ in Utah now in its second year. Last year, I went to Washington, to Roche Harbor, and did a gorgeous wedding. This year, I'm slated to go to Moab, to go to Denver to do weddings. And guys, it couldn't be going any better. Thanks in large part to folks like yourself, people who are listening to this and say, you know what, I need a wedding or a mobile DJ for something, and then reach out to me. You can go to bestdjinutah.com. You can find me on all of the social medias at Richie T. Stedman, or you can certainly just send me an email, Richie, R-I-C-H-I-E-T as in tough guy, Stedman, S-T-E-A-D-M-A-N @gmail.com. I would love to see what I could do to make your event that much better. Whether it's a party or the biggest day of your life, you need the best DJ in Utah. And like I said, it doesn't have to be in Utah. It can just be the best DJ in Utah. I don't know. Now we start to get into like the technical things. It's bestdjinutah.com.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Here we are in the second block of the Cultural Hall, and before we get into a little bit more about you, I want to talk about going to church historic sites.
Oh.
So we have an opportunity here at the Cultural Hall. If you go to CamoraTours.org, next July, we are doing a church history tour with CamoraTours.org, and you're going to be able to see the Hill Cumorah pageant. Next year is the last time.
Yeah.
We're going to be able to see some other great sites as well. But while I've got you here, I didn't give you really a heads up that we were going to do this, but you've been to church historical sites.
And I really have wanted to get to Cumorah before. We're a Nauvoo family, so we've served two family missions in the pageant.
Uh-huh.
My son served one in the strike crew, and so once you're in that and you've been a part of that, you're a little freaky about Nauvoo.
Oh yeah.
So we could go on and on a whole nother episode about how much I love Nauvoo, but I will say this: I think there's value in visiting the church sites. I remember when I was 15 years old, my grandparents took us to Nauvoo. The temple had not been rebuilt.
Oh,
so
really?
This tells you how old I am. I will be 49 soon. And we visited Carthage Jail. And I remember walking in, going through the little tour, sitting in that room, specifically the gunshot hole in the door, and feeling the spirit of that place. And feeling the enormity and the weight of the sacrifice, no matter where you stand on church issues, mm-hmm. I think there's something to be said of the sacrifice of a martyr.
Mm-hmm.
And I could feel the immense work that had been done just in that little jail.
Yeah.
Fast forward all these years later, our family goes back to serve in the Nauvoo pageant, and we go to tour the Carthage Jail, which is just outside of Nauvoo. And I watched my 15-year-old son have the same reaction.
Interesting.
And I thought, you know, there's something specifically for me because of being in Nauvoo. It's this out-of-the-way place. It's not like you, like, hop off the airplane and it's right off the frontage road. You've got to drive a bit. You got to rent a car.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of back. you know, on the bend of the Mississippi. And it's this
it's the Mississippi.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And it's this small little community that I feel the pioneers that gave so much of establishing that town, that they get the privilege. This is my belief. They get the privilege of returning every summer when that place just explodes with visitors and the pageants running. And I just think they get the privilege of seeing what they started and then had to walk away from.
Yeah.
It's a magnificent thing to feel like we still have these places that have been preserved. Little plug, I have a very brief scene in a movie.
Oh yeah?
Very brief.
Plug like, away, please.
You better have your popcorn because you'll miss me in the opening scene of The Fighting Preacher.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah. And I found that I didn't make it as public as I thought I had.
Uh-huh.
Because honestly, it's not like I don't carry the movie at all. Yep. I don't even carry the scene.
Mm-hmm.
But people have called me out like, you didn't tell us. And we're sitting in the theater. And I'm throwing popcorn because there you are. So I am in the opening mission call scene. And that movie is really about the Bean family that went mm-hmm. back to Palmyra mm-hmm. and established for over 50 years these historic sites that we now have. And it's a compelling story of how much there was antagonistic feelings between communities about members of the church at the time and what they did to really, you know, to piggyback on what we said about my high school experience, create friendships, even though they didn't agree maybe religiously or yeah. or in other ways. So I think it's worth going on a tour, worth seeing those places, taking your kids.
And it's definitely something that that you cannot experience that richness of it without yeah. going and being in person.
Right.
So let me just give a couple of facts about this. Again, the website is camorratours.org. You fly into Rochester, you get to go to the Hill Cumorah, you get to see the Book of Mormon publication site, and then we get to attend the Hill Cumorah pageant. That's first day. That's get it done. That's get it out of the gate. Day two, we get to go to the Sacred Grove. I'm just going to hit highlights on some of these things. We travel to Kirtland, Ohio.
Which I heard Sacred Grove, like it is everything you think it's going to be.
I've never been. I've never been to Sacred Grove
either.
Or Hill Cumorah. Yeah. So I'll
are
be
you leading the tour?
I'm not leading it, but we are going to do special episodes from
okay.
the tour
okay.
and try and get special privileges because of the cultural
the
hall.
Okay.
So people that come with us can do it. There's Kirtland. There's the Whitney store. There's Carthage Jail. We're going to go there, spend some time in Nauvoo, go to the temple in Nauvoo.
Oh, you are going to Nauvoo?
Yep. That's one of the last days.
Okay.
And
I'm
going to
just
back.
Do a plug. So Spencer Condi, our family, uh-huh. was the temple president of Nauvoo. So for a period of time when we served there, we got to stay in the temple president's home and we got to stay with family and do the pageant. And that temple is basically a museum. You're going to see Mary Fielding's little shoes. You're going to see the original temple keys. So once you visit that temple, if you go in to uh-huh. do any of the temple work, it's a beautiful experience.
And so. Pictures aren't the same.
Not the same.
So you can go to camorratours.org, find out more information. You can do down payments and different payment plans as far as that goes. But we have to have this thing sold out by the 1st of January, so get on it. A great Christmas gift for your loved one.
I believe memories are better than wrapping something up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you know what you end up doing with that thing that you wrapped up?
Giving
taking it to the
GI
store.
A year later.
So, Gainalyn, the fortunately named, I'll go on from
thank
here.
You.
From here on out. The fortunately named Gainalyn, you grow up in California, and then is it the pilgrimage to go to Rick's College?
Yeah, and back in the day, we had to stop at Burlington Coat Factory in Salt Lake because I couldn't buy a coat warm enough for the frigid air and snow. It's even colder than you think it's going to be when you're a little California girl.
And you wanted to be there because you wanted to be surrounded by members of the church.
It's a really sad story, but I will tell you, my high school wasn't used to sending a lot of people off to college.
Okay.
And the few that went usually went to Chico State or the community college. And back in the day, things weren't like you apply online and you get accepted. And so I had done everything for my BYU Provo application and mm-hmm. given it to my advisor at mm-hmm. school. And he was supposed to like postmark it from the school and sign it. And all of a sudden I get a letter a few months later saying, thank you for applying for BYU. We'd love to accept you. But because your application came late, You will have to defer income in January term. And I was like, late? What are they talking about? I was on time. So I marched down to the school, went to the advisor's office, and I said, did you delay in sending that off? And he said, oh, yeah. So sorry. I had a huge pile of papers on my desk.
Oh, my God.
I'm not even kidding, Reggie. He's like, and one day I was like cleaning up my desk.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure he had this tone of voice in my head. That's what it sounded like.
I found it, so
I hurried and signed it and mailed it.
Oh my gosh.
Well, it got there too late, and so I can't go until January. What am I supposed to do in the fall? And I knew, I mean, based on a lot of things, it was time to get out of Dodge.
Yeah.
And so I looked around and thought, what are my options? And so I applied to Ricks College and got in. Had never been there, had never visited there, nothing. And my cute Rob was my family home evening brother. And the story we tell is that it wasn't really him that I was at first interested in.
Uh-huh.
The Bishop.
I'm assuming Rob is your husband.
Oh, Rob, my husband.
Okay.
Sorry, my bio says my cute husband, Rob. So
okay.
I assume everyone knows my cute husband, Rob. 28 years marriage.
Congratulations.
Thank you. He had a cute roommate.
So it was the roommate first.
Yes. The bishopric came around to do like pre-interviews to decide the home evening groups.
Uh-huh.
And I said, hey, so that guy that had the like tan pants and the navy blue blazer and the red tie. That
Tell
gave
me
the...
they were corduroys. Were they corduroys?
No, they weren't. They were slacks.
Okay. All right.
And he gave the opening prayer and sacrament meeting. I want to be in his family home evening group, which, you know, God was leading us all along the way.
Uh-huh.
And that was Rob's roommate. And so Dan Knechtel, he was a chiropractor for years, and we would run into him randomly down here. And we always would say, you're kind of the reason. I don't know if he knows the backstory of that. So Rob was just my friend. And I give a lot of speaking events for young single adults, college age, that are in the dating world. And I often get asked about dating and marriage. And I say, if you can marry your really good friend, there's value in that. And I'm not saying you're not supposed to be attracted to each other, but friendship has carried us through some pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah.
And we started out as friends first. Like, I wasn't putting on airs. Like, by the time we were engaged, he had seen the good, the bad, and the ugly, because he was just hanging around as a friend. And so first few years of marriage, I would often, when he'd get that shock look of why was I acting this way, I would say, don't act surprised. You saw this.
Yeah.
You saw this.
You know what this is.
This is not new.
You knew what I was when
you
picked me up.
Exactly. Yeah. Friendship is key.
Yeah. So did you date his roommate for a while?
And no, you just, I never dated.
Okay.
I don't want to say much more than that. Like,
okay.
I'm just going to say, Dan looked like someone I wanted to get to know, and
it didn't work out that way.
I didn't really need to get to know him much.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, that's fair. Plus, you married Robin and have been so for 28 years.
Yes,
which is 5 times longer than my first marriage lasted, and 28 times longer than my present marriage.
So I've talked about this. My parents were divorced before Marie Osmond was divorced.
So back in the time when it was really forbidden.
Yeah, I went to primary on Thursdays.
Okay.
Back in the day. I mean, when they announced 3-hour block, you think 2-hour block is great? 3-hour block was like revolutionary. I'm like, what? We don't have to drive to church and then go home and then we would come back for Sacramento. I mean, it was like driving all week long. And if you didn't live in Utah, we lived in Sacramento. Like, we had to drive.
Yeah, hours.
Yeah. So I went to church primary on Thursdays and no one had divorced parents.
Mm.
And people would ask, like, what do you mean your dad doesn't live with you?
Yeah.
And my dad was kind of the hot bachelor of the Sacramento area. And my mom was over the, like, mid-singles. And so people were always, like, hitting her up to get set up on blind dates with my dad, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
My parents have really, I think I've talked about it with you before, they navigated divorce in a very respectful way. They didn't need to tell us why they got divorced. We learned that.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyone going through divorce, I would advise, don't speak ill, if possible, of your ex.
Sure.
Because your children are half that person. And my parents have navigated a friendship. And the way they'll describe it is they still see each other as brother and sister in the gospel. And so they want the best for each other. And so, yeah, they were divorced. And my mom had 2 little girls and she was a single mom. And I think that has actually helped propel me through some tougher times in our own marriage that like you've lived through that. You understand that marriage isn't easy. And my mom remarried and my stepdad is wonderful and they had a family and my dad remarried and he had five kids and he's unfortunately single again. Mm-hmm. And, but my parents still remain good friends. My mom and stepdad just recently moved to Houston after always living in California, and now they're not close. And my dad and my mom were really emotional about like who's gonna check. They check in on each other, and they're each other's advocates.
That
so.
Is a rare thing.
It
for
is a rare
parent.
Thing, and it doesn't mean that there was not hard stuff, and sure. there was a reason for divorce.
Sure, sure. Yeah. It's not like they were like, "This is so great. Yeah. Hey, let's end this."
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
actually, Richie, I just saw someone post that on Facebook. They were going through a divorce and they did a video celebrating their divorce was final and that they had both like intentionally decided to be positive. Their journey had ended together and they'd gotten everything out of each other that they wanted. And I'm mocking a little bit here because kids are involved and I'm not trying to judge, but they just had experienced everything that they were going to experience in their marriage. And so they were going to walk away now.
Yeah.
And it feels a little like McDonald's marriage stuff sometimes.
Ooh, interesting.
Just a little bit. Like my father-in-law died of MS.
Okay.
And the last 15 years of their marriage with him alive on earth, I guarantee you my mother-in-law was not getting all of her needs met.
Hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
She was committed to someone. I have a neighbor that his wife had early Alzheimer's onset at age 43.
Yeah.
And she's younger than me by a year or two and is completely incapacitated. He brushes her hair. He gets her nails done. He's, you know, those are the marriages I look at. And I think marriage is tough and it's hard. And we have some mutual friends that are going through some similar stuff. And
sure.
I think it's not always about we journeyed together and got everything. You know, like marriage right now is not about like meet every emotional, spiritual, mental need. And like, let's create an Etsy store. And if we're not doing all of that together, let's part ways. I see a lot of that sometimes out in the world right now. And it's disheartening.
You know, it's interesting to hear you speak so boldly about that. Is that what you author and speak about?
I author and speak about literally every uncomfortable subject.
Why?
Always.
What gives you the right?
Because I guess I'm willing to have the conversation. I feel like Satan, let's just be real, he talks about all this stuff that he's actually not experiencing. He's always messaging and marketing about sex and family and faith, and yet he's actually not having sex and he's not having a family and he's not living in faith. And so I kind of want to take all those topics back. Like, can we as a faith community, whether you identify as Latter-day Saint or not, can we start having conversations around these subjects? And I believe in naming to tame.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, one of the big things I will always talk about, it's not the only thing I talk about, but it doesn't matter what group, what business organization, school, church group asks me on or to be at their event, I will always talk about suicide prevention because 5 years ago that dear sister of mine was 40 years old and took her life. Mm. And so I've been talking about depression, anxiety, and suicide in a really open way the last 5-6 years that is now starting to become more commonplace. But I believe when we talk about addiction, when we talk about depression, when we talk about marital struggles, when we talk about parenting in real authentic ways, and authenticity is kind of the new buzzword.
Yeah,
but
I'm
what
being
does,
my authentic self.
Yeah, yeah. What does that really look like? I mean, authenticity is vulnerable and it's messy. It's not like in a neat little package. It's not like, I think we want full stories and we want a little bow at the end and we want to say, oh, this marriage was this and it ended this way, or this parenting experience is like this and it ends this way. And most of us are like living an ongoing story of some sort. And every person I meet, I mean, I've had chronic illness. I was told we wouldn't have kids. I've done chemotherapy. I've gone through 2 job losses where we've lost everything. I mean, these are the things that when people look at me on like maybe social media platforms, think 7 books, 2 CDs, do TV, radio, whatever. And it's I guess I'm just saying is I'm willing to sit down and have a conversation or stand up in front of a mic and say, let's talk about this in a way. And what I've learned is that some of the hardest times of my life were harder because I didn't think there was one other person going through what I was going through.
Huh.
And this is pre like some of the hardest stuff I went through. There was no Facebook groups for that.
Right.
I think we social media gets a little bit of a bad rap, but there's communities now that you can be a part of where you can self-identify and say, oh, you're dealing with infertility, me too. Or, oh, you have a chronic illness, me too. Oh, your kid is autistic mind too, or whatever that is, and you don't feel so isolated. Because to me, isolation is what's killing us. I mean, if you were to take the complexities of suicide, if you were going to take the complexities of faith questions, I often say I just substitute for Gospel Doctrine Sunday. And this was the week, I don't know when this is going to air, but this is the week when we did 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, Titus, and Philemon. And 1 Timothy is like women should not teach. And so I was like, let's just get the elephant out of the, you know, in the center of the room. Let's read this verse. And no one knew quite what reference. And so we all read it. And everyone's like, and I said, and so I don't know why I'm teaching today, because I'm technically, according to Paul, not supposed to be teaching. And we talked about women's issues, and I really believe there's policy, there's doctrine, and there's culture. And I think we're getting better as a culture about talking about some uncomfortable things. But for far too long, we don't create family cultures or church cultures where it's okay to say, I'm really wrestling. I'm wrestling with something I read about Jules Smith, or I'm wrestling with a faith question, or I'm wrestling in my marriage. And going to church and having everyone whine about like their broken nail is just hard.
Yeah.
And so I just if I'm just one of the millions of influencers and authors and speakers, because there is a ton of them out there.
You can't throw a stone.
Oh, my gosh. Everyone's a podcaster. Yeah, I'm a podcaster. Everyone's on YouTube. I'm on YouTube. Everyone's on Instagram. Everyone's writing books. Everyone's speaking. I really only want to show up and do those things if I'm helping in some way. And if it's not kind of unique in some way, and I'm not saying they're not other people. Brené Brown for sure is talking about authenticity and shame, resilience, and all of that. But I think within a culture in church, what I've heard back from people when they hear me speak is that I talk about the awkward stuff, and especially our teenagers.
Yeah.
We water it down so much in Sunday school. And I just think Satan isn't like, the adversary isn't like, oh, it's fifth Sunday, I think I'll take a week off.
Yeah.
You know, oh, you went to Young Men, Young Women's this week. Okay, I'm gonna take a little bit of a break. It's rapid fire. Mm-hmm. Like, we have our phones. I heard the other day that some of the pornography publications are no longer going to publish like magazines anymore, because they can't compete with what type of pornography is flooding the earth right now.
Yeah.
Like that you can get on your phone. And so I just think, why aren't we messaging as a faith community about some of these things that uniquely we can put a faith lens on? I have atheists and agnostics. Yeah, I speak for a profession.
Right.
That buy my books, and they know full well that the lens that I write from and speak from is this Latter-day Saint lens. Mm-hmm. And but because they've also lost someone to suicide, they're like, "Thank you for talking about it in a way that no one is talking about." 5 years ago, when I started speaking, Richie, I would finish speaking at an event, and the majority of the people coming up to talk afterwards were female, and they were emotional. Mm-hmm. The last 2 years, it's male. Mm. My lines are filled with sobbing, emotional men that are, and really, statistically speaking, middle-aged men are the number one group suicide deaths. Mm. And we're not talking about that. So I think we still have a long ways to go. But I know for me that when I name something to a friend that I'm struggling with, it calms it in my heart. And so I hope that I'm messaging, whether it's when I talk about infertility or chronic illness or faith wrestling or suicide, depression, anxiety, any of those things, that it starts a conversation. Like, to me as a speaker, my job really is to fill up the well and then stand up and let the Spirit direct. And I've been building that muscle over the last, I've done about 850 events in 5 years. And I will tell you that I always tell leaders of schools or churches or organizations that invite me to come speak, I say, my job's just to start the conversation. I'm like an hour with you guys. Like, that's nothing. If I don't leave and you're still thinking about what I said 2 weeks later, and then that's leading to a conversation where a teenager tells their parents, I'm feeling suicidal. If I'm not saying something that leads a man to admit, I had this actually happen in Arizona a year ago where I was getting up to speak. I was actually with Brad Wilcox, which you don't want to take up time from Brad because he's a rock star. And I actually did. The Spirit was like, don't stop talking. And I kept talking and I kept talking and I kept talking about secrets. And I was just driving that message home, and I didn't know why, really. But I've learned to trust this kind of, I call it my schizophrenic spirit talk.
Uh-huh.
And I wouldn't let up. And I kept saying, you know, it's our secrets that kill us. And it's Satan who wants us to keep secrets because it keeps us in the shame. Mm-hmm. And I found out later that on the drive home after that event, an individual admitted that he had been abusing sexually his daughter and he was ready to get help. Mm. And, you know, sweet Brad was gracious as ever that I had taken up some of his time. And I'm sure there were people in the audience that night mad that they got less of Brad and more of me. But that's really what my job is if I can open up someone's heart and then share scripture in a really clear, honest, like relevant modern way. And that leads to a further conversation. And that happens for one. That's what I will say. I might not be everybody's cup of tea. I'm just saying.
Not tea. I don't think it's
herbal.
Tea.
Thank you. Herbal.
Thank you.
Richie.
Thank you.
Yeah. So if one person I say I show up for the one, that's my why. That was a really long answer.
Listen, I want to take a break. And in this third block, we are going to lean in. You left several what I like to call dangling carrots. and so our time, we will have about 20 minutes in our third block.
Great.
Where we are going to talk about...
chopping those carrots?
Yeah, chopping those carrots up. We're going to talk about suicide. We're going to talk about infertility. We're going to talk about the chemo. And we're going to dive in. So the challenge is going to be able to hit all these topics. And give them the respect and the placement, but also giving everyone's a heads up, this is going to be a heavy third block of the Cultural Hall. So let's take a break, and we'll come back and do that.
Consumer alert! Consumer alert! Dan the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. There's an extremely insane computer infection called Zeus Zbot, infecting hundreds of thousands of computers across the world. This infection is super malicious because it puts you in danger by recording every keystroke you make into your computer, stealing your confidential information, including your banking passwords. You could be infected and never know until you have all your money sucked out of your bank account. At PC Laptops, we can help. If you think you've been infected or just want to be safe, please bring in your PC, no matter what brand it is, into any one of our locations right now, and we'll scan it for free. Why are we doing this for free? Because we want to impress you so much that if you or any of your friends need a computer, service, or phone repair, you come to PC Laptops first. Get into any one of our locations right now or check us out at PCLaptops.com. PC Laptops, where computers start at $7.99. PC Laptops, we love you.
Time for the third block of the Cultural Hall. If you're enjoying this conversation and other conversations that we have here in the Cultural Hall, I encourage you to go to patreon.com/theCultural Hall and become a Patreon subscriber. That not only gets you into the sacred Facebook group. It's not secret. It's sacred. It's a thing that people can be a part of. There's 57 Patreon as of the recording of this. Subscribers, people who have found value and want to give some money to the Cultural Hall and its existence. I encourage you to do that. There are different tiers and would love it if you would pledge that support that way. It's patreon.com/theCultural Hall. And I'm not sure what you were laughing at. Were you laughing at the
secret and sacred?
Yeah, it's not secret. It's sacred.
I know. I just love your irreverence.
What's irreverent about that?
Just this is why I stalked you, and we had to be friends.
Yeah. So let's lean in. Where do you want to start? You get a pick. You guide it.
So last week, I think I was in Arizona speaking to about 800 college kids.
Okay.
And I was talking about some of those subjects you just said, which I usually do. And this girl came up to me, and she was super emotional, and she just said, I deal with depression and anxiety, and I sometimes struggle when I feel the spirit because sometimes that throws me into some anxiety. She says that might sound weird, but it just like makes everything, the spirit makes everything heightened. And so all of a sudden I find myself that. And she goes, I just wanted to thank you because you would go there and then you would say something funny and it would like reset my nervous system and everyone would laugh and then you would go there again. And so I think this final block, I think it's important to know that our Heavenly Father is joyful. And he loves to laugh. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we emphasize that enough. And he's very aware that he's asked us to live through 2019 with Snapchat. You know what I'm just saying there? I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I just did a post on Twitter last week. Like, I know we celebrate Pioneer Day big time here in the state of Utah. Parades, it's a holiday and all that. I believe the pioneers are cheering us on. I mean, I think that the pioneers come back to Nauvoo and say, oh, we got you. You've got to do Snapchat. We just had to pull a wagon.
Yeah.
You know? Try parenting with that, you know?
Sure.
So I would just say, first and foremost, that I get asked about the complexity of suicidal rates and depression and anxiety. And I say it encompasses all of us, everyone on the planet. I tell organizations, do not market me as the suicide speaker. No one will come to your event.
Sure.
But it covers everyone, which means everyone listening either deals with depression and anxiety themselves and maybe have dealt with suicidal ideation. They love someone that has, or they've already, like me, lost someone to that. And that is literally everyone on the planet. If I'm talking to a faith group, I can say, when they say, why is this? Well, that's the million-dollar question. Why? Why did Meg get tired? That's what I say. She got tired. She had a great bishop, met with her every week for 3 years. She had a great therapist. She was serving in Young Women. She had a current temple recommend. She had gone back to college. Her last 5 years of her life had been some of her best. But in all reality, she got tired and she started to believe the big lie from what I call the big liar. And that is that we'd be better without her. And I think we all walk around with these broken parts of us that we think if we were could fix them, then the world would be so good to have us. And if we can't fix them, whether it's addiction, whether it's learning disabilities, whether it's chronic anxiety and depression, then we should just check out, because we're not doing anyone any favors by being here. And that's the lie. So if one thing I say through this whole episode, that's what I'm going to say for the rest of my life on any platform I can be on, is that we're not better without you. We need you. My life isn't better without Meg. Yes, I've taken her passing and tried to make suicide one of my whys and what I write and speak and message around. And hopefully I have stacks of, for the ones I call them, letters, messages from people that hear me like droning in their heads when they're in their closets tired, that we need them to stay in their body. And so I say, stay in your body, because that body is glory. That imperfect body, mine has had a lupus diagnosis, and I've had to do chemotherapy treatments for a heart condition, and I went through infertility. Like, I want to trade mine in for 2.0 all the time.
Sure.
You know, but in reality, it's my glory right now. And it's part of my mission. And the scriptures say that in the last days, the hearts of men will fail them. And I believe that's the answer to the why. Why are we seeing suicide rates so high? It's a heart problem. Our hearts are failing us because of connection and shame.
So clear the table for me from any sort of marketing message or prepared thing that you've said before. And let's go right to that time. You obviously knew that your sister had struggled with anxiety and depression. Or did you know?
Yes. I say I had helped her out of the pit.
Mm-hmm.
And I use pit in my own life too. Like, I'm very aware and self-aware of when my arm or my leg can get into the pit. If I'm all the way up to my shoulders, my SOS calls to my tribe get pretty loud. And so I had helped her in and out. And that's really part of why there is, for me, a reality of the grief of suicide is different than other kind of grief, because it creates a what if. Mm-hmm. I had been the big sister that had talked her through some dark times. So why wasn't I able to that time? I know her bishop also, he still visits her grave and struggles, because he had watched her climb out of the pit and have good times and then fall back in. And so I would say, first and foremost, there's only one savior, and I'm not that savior.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to get really clear on that, because around the age of 7, when my mom was a single mom trying to work and take care of two little girls, I had this very clear impression of what my mission on earth would be, and whatever a 7-year-old can understand about that, other than there was a God and I had something big to do. And I misinterpreted that impression to mean I had to be perfect. And then if I was perfect, I could save everyone I love.
Mm-hmm.
So suicide is like my hell. I mean, that was my hell. I had gone through some really hard times, but the night my brother found her, that was my worst. And I remember really clearly thinking, oh, this is why people don't get out of bed.
Mm.
You know, this is why people don't want to go back to church. And
so take me then to that moment.
Yeah.
Probably something that you were like, this could be real. This could happen. This could be a choice that she could make. Your brother, I was unaware that was how the situation happened, but he was the one that found her, and you get a phone call, I presume, that says,
Yeah.
Hey, this is what's happened.
I share this in the first chapter of I Can Do Hard Things with God, which was my first book. It was my mom's birthday.
Oh.
They were out visiting me in Utah. They live in California. My sister had been staying at their house while they were gone. We knew that.
Uh-huh.
We hadn't heard from her all day on my mom's birthday. And when my brother called to wish my mom a happy birthday, they just mentioned, hey, the neighbor said Meg's car has been there this week. We knew she had kind of been since about Christmas. So she died in March, but around Christmas she had, what I say, fell back into the pit, which then becomes very isolating,
sure,
cuts people off.
Sure.
And a couple weeks before she passed, I had the distinct impression getting ready one day to write her a card and send it in the mail.
Uh-huh.
And I did. And I had the very distinct impression that would be the last. And I remember saying to God, that is the dumbest impression I have ever heard. I am going to do more than send a card. But at that point, she had stopped answering calls and texts, right, and
isolated herself.
Yeah, right.
To the point.
And so I knew we had gone through those periods of time before. And so I wrote in this card some very simple things about hanging on. And I loved her. And there was nothing she could do to make that love stop. And I mailed it off. And when we all had gone to bed, basically, I was shutting the house down, as the mom does.
Sure.
And my dad came in from the garage. And everyone was in their rooms already, and I was turning off lights.
Uh-huh.
He walked in, and I knew.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at him, and like, I can still feel it, Richie. Like, I can still feel everything. And I looked at him, and I said, no.
Yeah.
He didn't even say a word. He said, Ben just called, and I said, no. And I started screaming, bring her back. He literally didn't even have to tell me.
Wow.
And then I started, like, that total crazy movie scene is real. Like, it was quicksand, and I'm hyperventilating, and I'm screaming like this horrific tribal native scream.
Mm-hmm.
And she was more my baby than my sister. Like, I had been this in my head. All the oldest children out there will understand what I'm saying.
Right.
My job was to take care of my mom and my sister and everybody else. And my mom said later, I've never seen you respond. She was your child. I'm like, ding, ding. Yeah. And so I crawled up the stairs to get to my mom first.
Mm.
And then I tried to get to my kids, but I wasn't even cognizant of what was happening. And my brother, bless his soul, because that was horrific and really interesting. I would just say from that on, there was still major trauma that happened in all of our families. Like, grief sometimes happens and everyone kind of publicly knows, oh, the suicide happened, but there were job losses and a divorce and a fire from my sister's home burned down. I mean, all in that 5 years, we lost a job, we lost everything. Like, those 5 years, the last 5 years have been an interesting experience. But my brother actually started to, he divorced and kind of had to start over. I mean, that grief was pretty horrific for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he eventually met a girl whose brother had taken his life within months of Meg taking her life.
Mm-hmm.
And they're now married and the most beautiful relationship. And they both say, you know, Meg and her brother were instrumental in making that, because they understand each other. If you've gone through grief, you get it when you see it.
So, the question I have for that, which, you know, it seems almost insulting. It's like, so what did you learn, right?
Right.
But I mean, you've written entire books, or certainly at least chapters of books of it. But if there is a thing that people that are listening, either the thing that helped you, you know, make your way through it, or find peace with, you know, how you had left it, or hope for the future, like, what is the thing
so
that you take from that experience?
At the Cultural Hall, since we can talk about these things.
Yeah, let's do it.
I would just say specifically, like, we believe within many religious backgrounds that there's an eternal life factor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think there was a cultural misteaching for years that once you take your life, you're damned to hell, whatever that is.
Or you're certainly not going to be able to get the highest kingdom.
Right. And
which is false, by the way, just so everyone knows.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to bring up first and foremost. Like, that, like, there are certain people in my life, extended family and friends, that literally can't even say the word suicide. Like, that's how uncomfortable it feels. And so I think first and foremost, I've had to reconcile that. Like, I know it sounds cliche, but when you hit a loss, you get to reconcile what you thought you believed. Do you really, really believe it?
Right.
And so I had to have a real come to Jesus. Like, do I really believe in any? And I have another sister that passed when I was 10 years old. My 2-year-old sister died. So both my sisters are buried by each other. Mm. So I had wrestled with grief. My grandparents I adored. I held my grandma in bed when she died. My father-in-law had passed. Like, I had wrestled with grief. But there's a element of this that, like, why couldn't I have saved her? And I will say, through a very sacred experience, Meg was not just shocked by how many hundreds came to her funeral, but that when she passed, she was never alone. There were hundreds that had, and Elder Holland says that very clearly. And I'm sorry, if Elder Holland says it, the mic is dropped. I do not argue with Elder Holland.
Yeah.
And if he says angels are always near me, and he literally calls out, do not vote against the preciousness of life by ending it. Mm-hmm. And so what I would say is, I also had to learn that whatever is broken in me, I have to recover from my perfectionism.
Right.
Like, I have to let go of the shame that I don't have it all figured out, because it's a matter of life and death. And then I guess the last thing I've learned the most is that there is only one Savior. And you know, right now I'm parenting a college student that's a return missionary.
Way to go.
Yeah. And everyone's like, where's the book on that? And I'm like, I'm living it. I don't know what I'm doing, right? And there's a lot of this, like, agency thing, and how do we influence and love each other? And we're talking about ministering in church all the time. And I helped consult a little bit on the church's site on suicide prevention and ministering. And I think there's much we can do for inviting and influencing, but there's no one on the planet that we can save, right?
Yeah.
And so there's this fine line of, like, well, then we just check out because we don't know how to help our neighbor who's going through a divorce, or we don't know how to help our neighbor that's going through her fourth miscarriage and she can't have a baby, or what, right? And we want to take a casserole and fix it, or we want to fast and pray and fix it. I love talking about the woman with the issue of blood, because she had 13 years of everything she tried. The scriptures say she got worse.
Right.
What made her go that day on the road and try again one more thing? And for her, isolation was really the illness, because in her culture, if you had a blood issue, you didn't cook and you didn't hang out with people.
Yeah.
Which, for some of the women out there, were like, why did we give up that tradition? That's a great idea once a month.
Bring that back.
Bring that back. But what did she do? Did she Google Jesus's miracles and say, okay, you know what? I know, I guarantee you, every oil she tried, every blog she read, every therapist she went to, every keto diet,
all those
CrossFit training things she did, and she didn't get better from her blood issue. Her neighbors tried it, and they did. And they posted about it on Instagram and said, look it, I have had great results. My blood issue is now gone. That is the reality of depression, anxiety. Fill the gap. That's the reality of financial stress, infertility, whatever, chronic illness, you know, whatever it is. I remember thinking, like, wait a minute, I've tried all these things and all the crackheads are getting pregnant and I just want one stinking baby and I pay my taxes, you know, like, and then you hear people stand up fast in testimony meetings saying, we fasted and prayed last month and this month we're all better. And they wrote it up in the Ensign.
Yeah.
Most of us are living the really messy faith of 13 years of an issue of blood thing. Mm. And so I love that when she touched the Savior's hem of his robe, and in some biblical translations, it's the thread, he knew her and he turned to her and he said, woman, thy faith hath made thee whole. And I say, what faith? I mean, she had faith of, I'm going to try all this stuff and it's not getting better. Mm-hmm. That's really where faith, we like to talk about faith like it's a fruit snack. Like, we could go to Walmart and, like, I'm out of faith.
Yeah.
I need faith fruit snacks.
Let's see. I'll get a faith snack.
Yeah.
Grandma's sycamore's
exactly.
bread. And,
exactly. And so I think whatever you're going through right now, I had to get really clear with, like, this faith process and journey is messy. And Meg would say that if she could grab this mic right now. And she's often with me. Like, if people have those spiritual gifts and I'm speaking about her, they'll come up and they're like, they don't want to make me awkward. They're like, so we don't want to make you uncomfortable, but, like, Meg, we think, was, like, here. And I'm like, I know.
Yeah.
Because she's so joyful. The last year or so, she seems busy with some other stuff.
Sure.
And so I would just say there's an eternal progression for all of us.
Sure.
And Heavenly Father and the Savior welcomed her. And they get why she got tired. You know, like, I often say, why didn't we all intervene? The bishop has said to me, why didn't God say, get in the car and drive that day over? You know, because he knows the plan of agency is the plan we learn by,
right.
But he also understands that depression, anxiety is like this glass wall between you and I. Like, we can see each other, but if you deal with depression, anxiety, like, you can send all the love and all the spiritual promptings through, right. And it's kind of bouncing off.
Yeah.
So if you deal with that, especially chronically,
mm-hmm.
just be patient. And if you're tired, it's okay. I get you. I know you're tired. But, like, there's one study of those that have jumped from the Golden Gate Bridge, 90% of those that survive, which is a very small number, so don't do it.
Yeah.
Please don't do it.
Yeah.
But 90% of those that have survived jumping have reported, like, the greatest level of quality of happiness in their life ever. Suicide, to me, is about one decision someone makes, but it changes all their other choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to change the conversation about intervention, because people that take their life, by ending it, they're trying to end the pain. And
right.
we can all relate to that, right?
Right? Right.
And that hopeless feeling of, like the woman with the issue of blood, I'm not sure I want to try one more thing and have it not work. So to me, hope is about trying one more plan B, trying one more thing. And so I think, as you go to therapy, as you try whatever modality you're trying to do to help your friends, your family members, your kids,
mm-hmm.
it's to create skills, I think, and a quality of life, even if your blood issue is still there.
Ganelin Condi, three questions that we ask everyone who steps into the cultural hall are as follows. First of all, do you have a calling right now? And if so, what is it?
I am the personal progress leader, and I was called after the program was announced to be canceled.
Okay.
So I feel like I'm the captain of the Law of Moses Club after Jesus actually was already born.
Well, look at it this way. You are the violin player on the Titanic. You have
exactly.
a very important job.
It is.
But soon that job will not
and
be needed.
And I actually have loved it, and it's been a wrestle. Anyone who's had those types of callings,
yeah.
they're a little ambiguous, let's just say that.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
I've never had this calling, and I really want it.
Okay.
I want to be the librarian.
Do it.
I love to organize and talk to people, and to me, that is what the librarian yeah. gets to do every Sunday.
How was church today? Oh, I got to hang out in the library and talk to Ganelin.
Yes.
The last question that we ask everyone who steps into the cultural hall and interpret it however you may.
Oh, no.
Is what is your favorite part of your faith?
The favorite part of my faith is I don't know any other way to make it through. Like, it's the thing that it's the Liahona. It's the light in the barges that the Jaredites traveled that were dark, because the storm was like getting them to the promised land. So the boat's going under the water and above the water. My faith, as imperfect and as messy as it is, and so much a work in progress. Like,
yeah.
I'm not about, do you have a testimony? I don't even ask that. I'm working on conversion.
Right.
Conversion is messy, and it's a
right.
process. It's the thing. It's the thing. It's the everything for me. It's the why, it's the how, it's the why do I even want to? And my dad used to tell me I'd be great in sales. And I used to tell him, Dad, there's only one thing I can sell that I think everyone has to have. And it's my faith.
Yeah.
But I honor your faith. Like, I'm a big interfaith speaker
mm-hmm.
because I love anyone trying to show up in their own faith. I just visited Amish community.
How was that?
I went to speak in Pennsylvania, and that was an interesting thing to watch these two, like the Mennonite and the Amish community interfacing with this non-Amish community.
Uh-huh.
And I just, it inspired me. A couple years ago, I went to speak in the Middle East and to visit mosques and to watch how people are living their faith as Muslims
uh-huh.
inspired my faith.
Huh.
So I grew up in a community where I was the token, and I loved hearing going to Catholic church services, and I love community church services and Jewish synagogues. And so I just feel like faith is how and why we do anything.
tell people about your podcast and your books, where they can obviously find it all at gainalyn.com. But tell people about your podcast and your books.
So my podcast is a non-denominational platform, which I appreciate. It's called the Reconnect Podcast. It's on video and audio. So if you're more a YouTube watcher and not a podcast listener, it's on those platforms. And the link for that is in my profile on Instagram. My website has links to all the other platforms, mm-hmm. and my speaking schedule is on that website. So if there's a free event or a paid event near you, I would love to meet you. And if you see me in the store, usually at Walmart, looking a little homeless, Richie, I'm serious.
I don't believe it, because every time I see you, you're polished.
Because I shower before I see you usually.
Yeah.
Okay, but run into Walmart.
Yeah, people, you don't need to shower. You don't need to polish.
Please come up and say hello. Or I often post about attending the temple, and it's not because I got it all figured out, but because it's one of the tools in my toolbox. Mm-hmm. And people will say, oh, I saw you, but I didn't want to come say hi. Seriously?
No, say something.
Come up, yeah. And you're going to get an 8-second hug.
Yeah.
If you don't give me 8 seconds and you don't go all in on it, people that have had these know I will go to 15 seconds
sure,
on the hug. So
sure.
The non-huggers, you have been warned. Yeah. Because no one's going to die and say, oh my gosh, Heavenly Father, I wasted so much time hugging people on earth. No one's going to say that.
Ever.
Ever.
We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back.